Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast. A couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, we had a huge, huge runway of show out ahead of us, and we've burned through it all, and we are fresh back from our big San Francisco Sketchfest show.
That's right. If our show were an airplane about to take off, we're in that sandy part when the runway runs out, and we're recording this fairly close to the release date for a change, so it gives us an opportunity to talk about timely matters like that Sketchfest show that we just did last week.
One of my favorite things about Sketchfest was that you and I booked like a week-long trip to go see a bunch of shows and do our show and hang out and see friends and stuff. And whenever we would interact with other people who were at Sketchfest to perform, they'd say, "Oh, how long are you in town?" when we tell them, and then they'd look at us like we had two heads. Or they'd look at us like we had a Star Trek podcast and go, "Why are you staying for that long?" And we'd say, "Because we wanted to see comedy shows and live podcasts and stuff."
It really made me think a lot about whether or not people who work in comedy, like what proportion of those people are also fans of comedy. And I just sort of assumed that like you consume comedy when you work in the comedy space. But to a person, Ben, you're right. Like everyone we talked to was almost aghast that we would stay a week. And I'm really glad we did.
I really like going to live podcasts and I love going to stand-up shows and stuff. But I bet if we as podcasters had to do what stand-ups do, which is go be at stand-up shows all the time and then, you know, get 5 minutes of the stage time to ourselves, we would be less excited about devoting a week to seeing other people's stuff.
That analogy makes perfect sense. I mean, it's going to the workplace to hang out.
Right. Yeah. And like, I think a lot of like we're the rare podcasters, at least in the comedy podcasting end of things, that didn't come to this from a prior career in comedy of any kind. So we don't have that. We're not like burnt out on it to begin with, the way I think some people probably are.
It's like if all of the venues at Sketchfest were my basement, then I would totally understand the reticence towards going and hanging out the way we did.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, like, we get to be fans of it and enjoy it still, and I wonder, like, we've had a couple of conversations over the couple of years we've been doing this about how we can walk into a room of comedy podcast people, but we're not considered comedians because we don't have, like, a comedy career also outside of the show.
You get challenged when you're in professional company. At a festival this way, you're often asked, "What are you here for? What are you doing?
Right.
What are you?" Basically. And I don't know whether I will ever come around to the idea of calling myself a comedian, because I feel like that is a totally separate and different talent than what you and I do. But
yeah.
But to be considered, you know, part of the gang, I think, was a great feeling for sure.
It was amazing, and we had such a fun show. We had like not really enough time for our show, but because we had to do 2 hour and 15 minute podcasts in 2 hours, we had Greatest Generation and Friendly Fire both on the same bill, and we had like 5 minutes to turn it around. So it was a bit of a frantic show, but I think people enjoyed it. It seemed like a lot of people stayed around afterwards to say hi and, you know, take pictures and stuff. It was really fun. Somebody brought a ton of Star Trek trading cards to give away.
Show night is always a hectic time for me and us. I mean, from load in all the way to the end of the show, like,
yeah.
That light at the end of the tunnel, which is often the opening of the door after the show to you know, all of our friends is just a really great reward for all the work it takes to put it on. Like, I think we had a great venue, and I think it was so fun to look out and see it packed with our people.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was really cool. It was a beautiful room. It was like a old-time theater with a balcony and a orchestra. Like, it still doesn't really seem real to me that that is happening for this show.
Our parents were there for the first time at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. That was your mom's first experience of the live thing, right? And it was your wife's first experience since our first ever live show.
Yeah, my wife was at the first ever show at the Rendezvous in Seattle, which was, I think, around 50 people. And so the scale of this Sketchfest show was a lot different. And the scale of the afterhang was a lot different. Like, you can try to explain to your mom and your wife what it's like after a show to meet all these fun people, but until they see it, I wouldn't believe it either. So it was neat to share that with them.
Yeah, it was a great time. I really enjoyed doing it with you. We had we had our co-host from Friendly Fire, John Roderick, on both shows, so he sat in on the Greatest Gen version. And we did it with him one other time at Max FunCon East. So I'm pretty sure that's the version of the Premature Assimilation tour that is going to go in the donor feed around pledge drive time in the spring. But
it's a really fun and funny show. It's
John is great at that, and like we were marveling afterwards. Like we take notes and like try to think of things that will be interesting and funny to say like ahead of time. John does not. He is capable of like sitting there with us and punching just as hard without having prepared basically at all.
Yeah, it's a special performance magic that maybe one day after hundreds and hundreds of reps we will have, but it's a singular thrill to share the stage with both of you. Two people who work in very different ways and yet like reach the same end in comedy. Like, it was hilarious to be up there.
Right back at you, buddy. Speaking of thrills, Adam, do you want to talk about the episode we came here to talk about today?
I don't know what could be less thrilling than Deep Space Nine, Season 1, Episode 16, The Forsaken. The Forsaken.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
It's an episode that starts with Sisko's commander's log.
He's basically saying, like, these boring Federation ambassadors are here to go look at our big hole. And
no one wants a hole examination.
Especially three people. Four people, really. And so he's talking about how he has dumped the responsibility for keeping these people, these ambassadors, entertained onto Julian Bashir.
It's a simple job. Just keep them happy and away from me.
And we cut to Bashir in Quark's bar, and he is really struggling to, like, do all of the niceties of diplomacy. Even though these diplomats are Federation people talking to a Federation person, they're expecting him to just bend over backwards about everything.
Perhaps we should all just get some rest.
So often the personality type who is the ladies' man that Bashir considers himself to be, like, that skill is transferable to things like diplomacy. And I was really surprised that he couldn't flip that switch over into another area.
Yeah.
It seems like a shared skill. Like, when you're when you have a ton of charisma the way that he at least believes himself to have.
Right.
Like, he's just giving up before it even begins.
The ambassadors are definitely not doing anything to ease his nerves. Like, they're criticizing Sisko's decision to put a first-year officer on them, and they're all asking for different things that are kind of mutually exclusive, and asking awkward things of him, you know.
Are you actually suggesting we indulge in one of those disgusting Ferengi sex programs?
No.
This entire time where Bashir is sitting at this table trying to keep these people interested, you can just see the storm a-brewing over his right shoulder. There is a cotton candy thundercloud over at the Dabo table.
In many ways, Lakshana Troy is the person you want in a casino, right? She's casino fun. She's she's going to blow on all the dice. She's going to be the loudest cheerer at the craps table.
Yeah.
Like, she's an energy person that
way. She's rich, and she's also fancy in a trashy kind of way.
She's Reno fun, you know?
Yeah. We hear Lakshana shriek, and she starts complaining that she has been robbed.
Oh, my Latinum hair brooch!
And no sooner has she started to toss her authority around,
I want everyone strip searched until you find my brooch.
Then Odo comes in.
May I be of service?
And uses the investigative technique of looking around to find the thief. And I guess he like deduces that because she can't read guilt on Quark, then there's like some other alien in there that also is like kind of like a Ferengi.
It made sense that since you couldn't read Quark, you might not be able to read this charming fellow either.
That guy's got pockets full of stolen merchandise, and Odo takes that guy off and locks him up, presumably. But Lakshana is positively sprung off of Odo after this little event.
Oh, how perfectly brilliant of you.
It's like she was tied to railroad tracks and Odo saved her before the train ran her over. It's that level of obsession, you know, the obsession right. that often someone has for the person who saves their life.
What do you think about the Lakshana Troy of this episode, Adam? Like, she seems like she was always kind of a colorful character in TNG. She seems like she's really been like put into cartoon mode, at least with her costume and hairstyle in this. Like, she would never have had pink hair in TNG, would she?
Right. My feelings about her change throughout the episode, and up front it's fair to say that I was resistant to her presence the way that that Odo is. I mean, Odo is basically the viewer proxy in that he's trying to wiggle away from her, he's trying to put her off on other people, he's trying to change the channel. It's not happening.
I'm just picturing you watching the TV stamping on the floor like my dad stamping on the wheel well when he was teaching me to drive, you know, trying to hit the brakes that aren't there.
Yeah, driver's ed style. Lakshana conveys the idea that, like, she may be in it for the unique bang.
I've never been with a shapeshifter.
Been with?
Odo being one of a kind is something that really appeals to her sexually. And that's a part of her personality that I'm not sure we've gotten very much of from TNG. Like, we sort of gotten the whiff that she's DTF.
Right.
And she's embraced her own sexuality, and she's proud, and she's like a strong female character in all the right ways.
That's been rewritten a couple of times, though, because, like, there's definitely at least one episode of TNG where she's trying to marry a guy just because he's rich and powerful, right?
Yeah. Her reasons for romance never seem fully romantic. They always seem like they're couched in something else.
The way her sexuality works is something that is very familiar from television. You know, the kind of oversexed female character who goes and gets what she wants is something I've seen a lot on TV. And in my life, I've met women that are sexually awakened and go get what they want, but it's never this kind of like va-va-voom, like, you know, pushing themselves up against a nervous man kind of thing. It seems like that's either a generational thing or a television trope or just something that I haven't encountered in my life. Who knows why? women haven't been throwing themselves at me like this.
It's such unfamiliar territory, Ben.
So I don't know, like, if I know how to judge it, but it's like, it's so weird to imagine somebody like this, right?
This is pretty much the wheelhouse of when Sex and the City first went on the air, right? And if Loxana is anyone, she's going to be Samantha.
She's a total Samantha.
In the way that I'm a total Charlotte.
Yeah, you're a real char dog. I guess I'm a Miranda. You can't self-appoint as a Carrie, can you?
Yeah, I mean, that's tough.
I feel like a Miranda.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
I guess what we could consider the B story is O'Brien going badday.gif on the computer.
Fusion power plant is operating within normal parameters.
What are you talking about?
He's basically picking up his keyboard and smacking it into the monitor.
It's a bloody inefficient system.
To the degree that, like, he attracts the attention of his coworkers. In any other office environment, I think he'd be sent home.
The boss even comes out and says, like, why don't you take it easy on that poor machine, Miles?
Miles is like, do not send me home. Anywhere but there.
O'Brien has got, like, a lot of thoughts about how a computer and a reactor should be set up and how things should go. And the Cardassians clearly designed and implemented the space station with a very different philosophy. So, you know, when the operating efficiency isn't within the parameters that O'Brien likes, it's really frustrating to him. And he's, you know, he's advocating for, like, a tear down and rebuild on the scale of, like, a several year project. And Sisko's journey up to this point has been like, I'm gonna, like, take this command seriously, even though I didn't want to initially. It's become interesting and compelling, and like, and it plays into things that that I didn't know that I wanted to do with my career. And somehow in the last, like, couple of episodes, he has slipped back into, like, God, I fucking really don't care about any of this shit. No, O'Brien, I'm not going to authorize rebuilding the computer from the ground up. Like, who cares?
Yeah, it's interesting that, like, in the absence of Jake, he sort of becomes station dad to everyone else, a figure of whom everyone just sort of asks things, and it's up to him to either grant permission or deny it, and then he sort of walks off shrugging his shoulders.
Yeah, and there's no character for whom that is more frustrating than O'Brien, because, like, every printer tray that he opens has no paper in it, and it's just, like, it is like a comedy of computer errors.
PC load letter? What the fuck does that mean?
Is this the moment where the probe comes through the hole?
Yeah, so, like, sort of simultaneously, the ambassadors minus Loxana and Bashir come on the bridge, and an object comes through the wormhole, and
it looks to me like a simple human brand garbage can that you have in your kitchen.
Yeah, the one that should cost $65 but cost $130 for some reason.
It's a great garbage can. It's the only garbage can you need.
Yeah. I'm not going to say I didn't spend the $130. I'm just saying, like, come on. it's a bunch of sheet metal and, like, a piece of plastic to make a foot pedal.
This episode of The Greatest Generation is not brought to you by simple human garbage cans.
Oh, could you imagine if they sponsored us and sent us free garbage cans?
I might covet that sponsorship more than the Casper one.
It's a garbage can. You use it a third of your life.
We still haven't made podcast bingo blackout because stamps.com never called. Yeah. Like, we're just looking at an incomplete bingo card.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's too bad. I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't even know if I would approve that one. We'd have to see.
You think that's beneath us? I like going to the post office. It's a way for me to leave my home, which lately is really good for me, I think, and my mental health.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you, man. Like all of the excuses are good. When the diplomats come up on the station, there's a great take on Sisko where he does the like biting the insides of his cheeks when he first sees what's going on, and then like gets a big grin on his face and turns around and is like, welcome.
That feeling where you thought someone you invited to a party out of courtesy that you'd never in a million years thought would actually show up has shown up.
Somebody you thought was expendable.
Doesn't really matter.
They are just as annoying up here on the command level as they were down in the bar. Sisko has a lot more tools in his tool belt for using on them. And he says, like, there's going to be a complete briefing for the diplomatic delegation. Why don't you guys all go down to the promenade and watch it from there? That's like the best seats in the house for this anyways. And we are going to deal with it up here.
So what we've got constructed here is an A, B, and C story. Weighed about equally, I would say, for now.
Sure. So they start scanning this garbage can.
They wave their hands over the sensor.
Yeah, this is the updated version of the original Simple Human garbage can, the like chrome one that like you don't really see them anymore because they didn't have the smudge-free coating on them, and they've just not aged well.
Yeah, that's a bad look.
Yeah, but they start scanning it and like downloading files, and it's a weird thing. It's like, I think at some point somebody says it's got enough computing power to be the core of a galaxy class starship, but it doesn't have sensors or like any processes as far as they can tell.
I was shocked that they connected their computers to this alien probe after just meeting it, when every instance in Federation history when this has happened has resulted in at least the destruction of a ship, and occasionally many. Like, you remember that episode Contagion? There was an entire TNG episode about this.
Yeah.
Like, and they destroyed a galaxy-class ship in the process.
Be honest, Adam. There are like 24 TNG episodes about this. There's also Star Trek 1 and Star Trek 4 are about this.
Right. A little bit of a retread.
And yeah.
Look, you can retread a story, I think, as many times as you would like, as long as those permutations show some sort of lessons learned from the previous time. If one person had expressed any kind of doubt before the link up, like, remember the Yamato.
Yeah, he points to the bumper sticker that he's taped up in his workstation.
Yeah, there are real Yamato truthers on the station, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yamatotruth.org is... It makes for really compelling reading, but it's a little bit light on the fact-checking, in my experience.
Loose Latinum is a great documentary movie about that conspiracy, too. And O'Brien doesn't go so far as to, like, take the little dip switch on the floppy disk and click it over to file-safe mode.
You know, computer viruses can't melt duranium, Adam.
Yeah, so fucking O'Brien just goes ahead and plugs his USB drive into it.
Right. Yeah, and like, and they download the files and they're going to start looking at it. And, you know, that seems to be just the procedure that is taking place today. Meanwhile, down in Odo's constabulary office, LT shows up, and she's like gone to a slightly more realistic color of wig and a much more lingerie evoking style of shirt.
Is it the dress or is it my figure?
Honestly, it's your bra.
And she really like puts the moves on Odo. She's like,
Odo, it rolls off the tongue.
I was surprised that they never address whether or not she can read his thoughts.
Her decolletage is a war crime.
She could cause many car accidents. You never know if a head of state will be able to maintain his focus around her. How can she be a diplomat?
Those breasts are like the shaved heads of Winston Churchill. Ben, picnic always means fuck, right?
Oh, is it, she invites him on a picnic?
Yeah.
Man.
She's like, look, I've been up to those sex booths, and they can be reprogrammed to a picnic scene.
The last time she went on a picnic, it did not go well for her.
Now, that's what I call PTSD.
Picnic traumatic stress disorder?
Exactly. Guys, my new comedy album's about to drop. It's a tight 90 seconds.
This is why nobody takes us seriously as comedians at the Sketch
right.
Fest, Adam.
If only I could walk around with the crickets drop, just always playing whenever I say anything. That would be appropriate. Ben, do you think the holosuites operate the way arcade games used to, where like the really good games are 50 cents and regular games are a quarter? Like, and the analog to that is like all the sex stuff is a lot of latinum, and then like picnic scene is like a corner of a bar of latinum.
If Quark didn't own them, I'm sure we would have established this by showing a scene of him dropping a bar of latinum into the slot with a string attached to one end and pulling it back out.
Oh, man. I could never get that move to work.
I think we were born too late. I think that early vending machines were vulnerable to that exploit, but they figured something out.
You remember how exciting it was to put a fiver into a quarter changer at an arcade and get, like, the heavy handful of quarters?
Yeah.
God, that was a good feeling.
Good times.
It's the only thing that's ever felt sizable in my hands.
Odo manages to like slip away from her grasp, and we get him like walking up to Ops, and like the entire senior staff has been put on scan the probe duty, which seems like for a thing that doesn't have any known purpose and doesn't seem to be that interesting. They've devoted a lot of resources to it, but before we can get to that, Odo goes into Commander Sisko's office and is like, hey, dude, so one of those diplomats is not leaving me alone and has actually like gotten pretty grabby W/R/T the groin area.
I'd like to explain to you a concept called running interference.
Did you take that implication away from when she walked up on him in his office? It really looked to me like she was going for dick.
Do you believe that the junk grab was more than implied?
I think they explicitly implied a junk grab. I mean, it's framed so you can't see, but her arm is working in the way of like some over the pants penis touching.
What do you think your resting state dick size is if you're Odo? Because you got to put a bunch of thought into it, right?
Well, even more interesting than that, does he even have a dick when he is presenting as having clothes on? Does he bother with like making the shape under the pants when his whole body is just like a representation of a humanoid?
If that's true, then I bet there were days when he did fly some wang. Yeah. And it didn't go right socially.
Right.
Like he chose too much.
Or too little.
Yeah, like...
That's the last time I'll hang dong at a party.
Like the day that he flies the pool noodle walking around the promenade. Not a great day. That's probably the last day he does.
Yeah.
And then, like, as soon as someone opens his zipper, it's just, like, can of snakes. Sisko begins by laughing at Odo and is like, oh, this is hilarious. Your discomfort is making me very happy.
Have you thought of letting her catch you, sir?
And Odo continues on with how awful this is for him. And Sisko sort of pivots into, look, I'm not going to do you any favors here because I think this is a learning experience for you.
I can't help you, Odo.
Yeah, it's kind of not super far from the advice Picard would have in a time like this, you know? Like,
right.
This is a learning moment, and now your job is to learn as much as you can from it.
So back to the B story, O'Brien's now getting negged by the computer voice. And O'Brien looks like he's going crazy about this.
The computer's whole personality has changed.
She's talking to me in a whole new way. And she misses me when I'm gone. Like, I leave work and then something calls me back to work, computer-wise. So you gotta believe me, right? Everyone's sort of like rolling in their office chairs a little further away from him.
Yeah, and I think that's like a pretty quick scene because it is like basically from then on the station just starts to completely fall apart. Like Odo like tries to escape from Loxana by getting on an elevator and she invites herself on and the elevator like stops in the tube and that's like the first like bad malfunction that they've had, but it's the first of many. And it becomes clear that the computer is kind of doing this at Chief O'Brien.
There's an interesting shot here. You see Odo and Loxana get on the cargo elevator shot up front, and then they break the line and shoot from reverse. And you get to see just how cargo elevator like this whole ride system is, because you get to see the structure of the station go by.
Whizzing by, yeah. And there's
not
even
very
like,
dangerous.
Yeah, there's no gate or door or anything to protect them. If you bent over to pick up a pen that you dropped, you could hit your head and just brain yourself based on how fast they're going.
I've got to believe Rom isn't allowed to ride these. He's too much of an idiot.
You take the stairs, Rom. In case of fire or being Rom, take stairs.
Rom, sophisticated enough to stage an assassination. Too dumb for elevators.
So O'Brien is like, listen, Sisko, like I could fix this elevator if we were on the Entrepreneur, but we are on the Cardassian-built space station, Deep Space Nine, and rerouting the EPS conduits is easier said than done.
With this computer, it's always been like a wrestling match.
And Sisko's like, well, get started on it, if that's what the fix is, and we'll see how long it takes. Like, it seems like we've never done this before. And so they just tell Odo and Loxana to hang out. Like, they've attempted to use the transporter, and the transporter's not working.
Great. Everything's in working order, except nothing's working.
This entire episode has been leading up to the idea of getting Loxana and Odo locked in a dark space together and becoming vulnerable to each other.
You've got to believe that is in the story cloud version of this episode. That's the dead center circle. It's what would happen if we locked Odo and Loxana in a literal elevator together.
It's a great thing to get to. Like, I don't love the way they got to it, but I mean Odo is so emotionally closed off as a character. He's all about business and, you know, is constantly admonishing people that humanoids spend way too much time trying to fuck each other and get into relationships and, you know, wasting time entertaining themselves and stuff. And then you've got Loxana, who is like basically the opposite end of the spectrum. Like, all she cares about is relationships and boning down and connecting with people on an emotional level. Like, even her most annoying episodes are kind of about her forming emotional bonds with people.
There's a little bit too much shared between Picard and Odo for this to feel like a totally unique circumstance, though. The difference here is that it actually gets to a conclusion where I don't know if Loxana and Picard ever reach a satisfying conclusion of either them hating each other forever or them having the bond that Odo and Loxana do by the end of this episode.
It's a shame because if it hadn't reached a conclusion, then they could have had an episode where they have a Picard cameo and he comes on board the station and he and Odo go do some drinking and commiserate out Loxana. Would have been a real fun, real fun scene.
That's a great note session for sure.
Yeah. Like, if I had been in the writer's room, I don't know if I could have talked them out of wrapping this episode up the way they do, but I bet I could have tempted them with that little idea.
The thing about any locked in an elevator story is you need two components, right? You can't just lock people in an elevator. You also need a clock. And the clock that's put into motion here is the idea that Odo needs to get back in the bucket. Bad things will happen if he does not get into the bucket.
Yeah, and he is not willing to be that vulnerable, not just with a stranger, but with a stranger he's kind of afeared of and annoyed by at the beginning of this episode. And
talk a little bit about like how they introduce that, because when the idea is first breached, like it seems dangerous. It does not seem like a point of embarrassment. It's that, oh shit, what happens if Odo doesn't get back to the bucket? Initially, I thought he would turn into liquid and then he would leak out of the elevator and get electrocuted. I thought the danger was life-threatening. Did you surmise that it was purely about his shame from Jump?
I mean, I don't know. This is an episode that I remembered pretty well. So I think I knew that it was leading to that.
All right.
But I couldn't tell you like how I felt about it the first time. I mean, shame might not be the right way to put it. Like, not everything we want to do in private is something we're ashamed of. It's just that we have kind of some feelings about, where our personal boundaries are, and he has very strong feelings about this. And it's not something he's ever shared with anybody willingly.
He's afraid to show Loxana his whole asshole, and and if he goes liquid, like, that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
No one has ever seen me like this before.
She really draws him out. Like, he is initially, like, angling his body away from her and, like, just trying to kind of maintain a professional distance of, like, we'll be out of here shortly. Like, the crew is working on it. And everything about the way he is around her is closed off.
Yeah, like his posture and what his shoulders do.
Yeah.
And his change is gradual. Like he begins fairly sweaty, and then he turns into a guy who really needs some Neutrogena oil cleaning face wipes, and then he gets really red.
Yeah. Can you imagine if you got that wet every time you got tired?
Who says I don't?
He doesn't want to talk to her, and she, like, the way she draws him out is by kind of talking at him. Like, she tells him stories. She tells him a story from a TNG episode.
She's like, I get stuck in elevators all the time.
He cannot help but have things to relate to her because it's just a maelstrom of anecdotes, and eventually there's one that he responds to. And, like, she takes off the wig at one point and shows it to him to show that, like, hey, we can be embarrassed in front of each other.
I know I made that comment about your hair earlier, but you can just have mine, yeah. If that helps you.
Look at this. Under this wig, we have the same hair.
For a character that we have lampooned for so many episodes, like, she actually has a real expression of platonic love for Odo and her attempt to come to an understanding for what he's going through. One of the problems I had, though, is, like, if Odo is truly formless, like, as a resting state, then it was hard for me to take his vanity about his physical expression seriously. But it's how broken the actor is in his portrayal of this that really makes the moment shine for me. Like, this, there's so much truth between them happening, and it's all character-based. They're not saying a ton off of the page. It's their expression and their nuance here that I was really shocked by at like the gravity of emotion here.
Yeah. All of this is happening because Chief O'Brien clicked on a phishing email and got his Gmail hacked. And they come up with kind of a metaphor for to instruct their thinking about what is going on with the computer.
I had a pup once. If I had to lock him up, he'd scratch forever at the door trying to get out.
And it is that the equivalent of a computer program that is like a puppy. It wants attention and it wants to play. It's got a childlike interest in hanging out, but they just need to get it out of the computer. So they're trying to load it onto Honey Sticks at one point, and it's kind of the like harassing Siri technique where they just keep asking like tricky questions of the computer and lets it churn on those questions while they attempt to like load chunks of this program onto the Honey Sticks and pull them out. And
it's a real Daisy from 2001 moment here.
Yeah. And it doesn't go super well. Like the puppy kind of outsmarts them, and the stakes get raised even further than Lwaxana and Odo being stuck in the elevator by Bashir, who takes the diplomats on a walk through kind of a bad part of town where they're like walking down some hallway and just like a door that they are walking toward explodes in a huge ball of fire.
So what's the matter with you?
And I guess the station has some sort of like automatic lockdown where all the doors come down, and it sort of looks like they're just going to be burned alive in there. It's really intense.
You don't want to take a walk down Fireball Alley. Bashir's having that bad of a time with these people that he's willing to do it. And the whole idea of the station clamping down in a fire really made me think of like what happens when you have a fire on a submarine and how dangerous that is. Like
right.
a fire in space has got to be the most terrifying thing.
You got to close off those bulkheads, Adam.
Yeah.
Now, when you're renovating a space station, you're going to want to have an inspector come in and do a check for asbestos. If you don't mitigate any asbestos, you could run the risk of your entire work crew contracting mesothelioma.
21st century regulations stipulate that a working fire suppression system should be checked every 6 months. That way, your diplomatic mission won't be in danger of being burned to a crisp.
So Bashir and the diplomats are Bashir and the diplomats was my surf rock band in college, but
oh yeah,
these guys are getting burned.
Why wasn't that band popular?
I don't know. they're getting burned to a crisp down there, and so like the stakes are that much higher, and O'Brien realizes that they're like if their puppy metaphor holds, then they've been going around about getting it out of the computer in exactly the wrong way.
Do you think Odo could put out a fire if he turned himself into liquid and then like threw himself on it?
Could Odo like throw half of himself at something and be fine? Would he grow the rest back?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like if Odo were able to split up, that would be great. There'd be eight little Odos doing security around the ship. So many questions about Odo.
Me too. What do? They like, I think O'Brien says he's got to build a doghouse.
I'm not sure I know what you're getting at.
They really just get totally carried away with this metaphor.
God, no kidding. And like O'Brien goes on and on about the time he had a puppy and all of the behaviors of the puppy. As someone with a new dog, it's all I want to talk about. So I understand that. But still, like, be a professional, O'Brien.
I was just yelling at the TV, this is a metaphor. You don't even know if it's the right metaphor. Like, it's an alien computer program. Why are you so fixated on it being a puppy, O'Brien?
So he creates a partition, like, full of meat scraps that attracts the program.
It's a hot dogs hitting girl's face dot gif, the partition.
Sure is. But what ends up happening is they end up Moriartying the program.
Mm-hmm.
Like they close the door behind it, and this poor puppy is stuck in this computer partition. Cisco's like, "What are you going to do with it now?" And O'Brien's like, "Oh, I swear, I'm going to take care of it like a Tamagotchi pet. I'm gonna feed it and stroke it and love it."
Yeah, I love it. I love my little naughty pet. You're naughty.
You've seen what a great father I am.
There's no way this is going to come back to bite us.
Yeah, I wonder whatever goes down with this program.
Oh, I
back in the cargo elevator, Odo has turned himself liquid and has hopped into Loxana's dress, which she has sort of opened up in a bowl.
Yeah, it's like a an idyllic painting of a girl going apple picking, except for it's an older woman in a wig with a goo man.
That fabric is not a natural textile. Then, like she's wearing a tarp, right?
She has all of her dresses sprayed with Scotch Guard just in case. You know, she's down for a lot of sexual hijinks, so you never know what's going to spray on you.
Gross. 10 minutes have gone by, and I've totally forgotten about Bashir. What happened with them?
So they get the pup program shunted into the computer, and so everything is like coming back to normal. And I think Sisko and Kira have both been trying to cut into the section of the station that Bashir is stuck in with the diplomats with phasers, and it is just like hardened armor that is closing.
It's like a bank vault door.
Yeah. So they haven't been able to do it. They finally get it open. They run in there with like space level with space fire extinguishers, which are an awesome prop that I totally want one of. like if I could have one of those on the wall of my office, I would be so fucking geeked out. I would be so thrilled.
Area man killed in house fire when sci-fi prop fire extinguisher fails to extinguish fire. Story at 11.
Area dork face killed. Anyways,
they're going to save that for the part of the local news that's the lighter side, like the last 2 minutes.
Yeah. Bashir and his charges have taken a Newt from Aliens approach to avoiding the fire, and they crawl out of a crawl space down near the floor, and the ambassadors are all very complimentary of Bashir's strategy for keeping them alive, and give him high marks with Sisko. And then we get a little button on the episode.
Yeah, Loxana runs into Odo on the promenade, and they share that moment that people have after they experience a traumatic event together.
It's kind of like the morning after at the water cooler at the office.
Yeah.
Two people who have shared a little bit more than they expected to after happy hour drinks.
Loxana's a little less grabby in this exact moment, but she still puts it out there that next time she may be down. And this is an idea that isn't totally crazy to Odo in this moment, I don't think. Especially because as she turns and walks away, Odo totally gazes upon that ass.
Mm.
Did you follow his eyeline here?
I didn't. Did he turn to camera and say, "It's a shame to have to sit on something that pretty"?
Your Odo sounds a lot like the Batman. If there's one thing I hate, it's the idea of having to take off the bat suit to fuck. Most women find it strange that Alfred is in the bedroom with me. But I need him to get me out of this thing.
I've asked Lucius Fox down at the office to develop a spring-loaded codpiece that can be ejected at will. But it's going to take the boys in R&D a little extra time. Hard to cover that one up as a military, as a piece of military research.
Not only does Alfred get me out, he puts me in.
How do you think I perform oral? With this thing on my face.
I, too, am a good friend of Alfred's, Batman.
Friend of Alfred means is code for the type of sex when you have someone else put you in. We're a very small group.
You merely adopted chowing on pussy, Batman. I was born doing it.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
This episode definitely won me over. I think that they kind of fucked up having some pretty thin bullshit ideas about how to get them into the elevator. But once they were in, those two performances were really good and kind of made it all worth it in a way. How about yourself?
You're totally right. The buildup is awful. This had all the makings of an awful episode from Jump. But this is like if Problem Child had the ending of Rudy. Like, by the end, I was totally affected by the story in a strong way, a way that I did not expect at all. I was ready to bail, but I'm glad I stuck around for this ep because, like, this doesn't fix the problem of Loxana, but she has a great moment here, and I would argue it's a stronger moment than the one she had in TNG when she talks about her dead daughter.
Right.
Grief is a thing that humanizes everyone in, you know, no matter what their different expression of grief, I think it's a unifying feeling for everyone who experiences it. Like, Loxana chooses to be a good person in this elevator in a way that makes her more of a redeeming character to me in this case than she did when she was grieving on the holodeck. Like, this feels more real to me and powerful. Like, she doesn't have to do this in the way she has to come to terms with her dead daughter. And that really worked for me.
I think it's just that she's never had an opportunity. I guess in the Mr. Timmons episode, she's kind of more selfless. Like
right.
A lot of her episodes have been about, like, her, you know, doing something on her own behalf that's all about her and, like, kind of breezing past the impact that it's having on other people and not really caring about it. And a couple of times now she's had an episode where she gets an opportunity, like, and without breaking character, an opportunity to do a good thing for somebody. And it shows that she is a caring person. It's just that she's got kind of a persona that is a persona and a sense of self that is, like, so big that it fills up most rooms she's in. But if she is connecting with a person, she really does care for them and want what's best for them. And she's not the asshole she could appear to be at first glance.
That's the essential contradiction about her characters. Like, why is an empath so self-centered?
Right.
Like, if her nature is about the feelings of others. Well, I've got a feeling we have some priority one messages, Ben. You want to check those?
I love checking priority one messages. Everybody knows that.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, a couple of priority one messages here. The first one is of a personal nature, and it is from me, and it is to Q. And it goes like this. What is this? Where am I? This is not the Sesame Street. That's it.
That's it. Value for your P1 dollar right there.
Yeah. I am baffled, Adam. I really wish I knew what was going on ever. Maybe this time more than ever.
Almost entirely unintelligible.
It's unintelligible. I can only hope that there's some, like, social network code going on. You know, like, there's a... Did you know that there's now a Greatest Generation Slack group that hangs out?
Oh, I have heard that. I don't have Slack, though.
Oh, it's just a website.
It's not an app? I thought it was an app.
You can do it as an app, but you can also just do it through your browser. But,
yeah?
You know, I feel like when we find out that something like that exists, you know, we know about the Reddit and the Facebook and, to a lesser extent, the Friends of DeSoto chat group, now the Slack.
The Tor site.
Yeah, like, there are so many places that people are getting together to talk about this that... This must be meaningful to somebody, you know, but It would be like an 80-hour-a-week job if we had, if we were doing like a proper survey of all of those places and modes of communication.
I sure am grateful we have moderators who have self-appointed.
Yeah, we are super lucky.
Ben, our second priority one message is from Anson Scotty. It is for Dave Toolman Tool, and the message goes like this. Congratulations on your recent engagement. I'm so happy you finally found the Rashawn to your Kevin. Or is it the Keiko to your O'Brien?
Oh, no.
Here's to many years of sipping good tea at your nice house. Can't wait to see you at President's Day Rock Weekend. Live long and do it like you brew it. What's this? Extra characters? Well, okay then. Fuck Plavim.
Twist ending. This yeah. P1 message directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
Both of those marriages are awful, right? Whether it's Kevin Rashawn or Keiko and O'Brien, I don't think you want to wish that, either of those, onto your good friends, right? In one, you are either a Rule Doll or someone who lives forever. And in the other, you're in a loveless marriage.
Yeah. You think Keiko and Chief O'Brien have a lot of seasons of TV to put together like a more healthy relationship. Do you think they'll ever do it, Adam?
How many seasons are there to find out? Like another 100 episodes at least?
Oh, there's like 150 episodes at least.
I think it says a lot about how I feel about Keiko and O'Brien in that, like, I don't know if I care, Ben.
Oh, Adam.
I love the show. I just don't, I can't ride for that relationship at this point.
Yeah. It's too far gone.
No. Well, if our show isn't too far gone enough for you to consider a priority one message, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200. And as Ben always says, they're a great way to keep the lights on at this here production.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I think O'Brien is crazy in this episode. And he should have been relieved of duty fairly early on.
Yeah.
He is not talking much sense. He's talking in abstraction and metaphor that he just sort of expects Bajorans to understand. Like, he's got a Bajoran tech working with him.
Yeah.
And he's talking about puppies. Like, she would even know what he's talking about. How is she supposed to get her work done while he's talking about things that she's never experienced?
That's not
being a good boss, O'Brien.
That would have been a fun take if they just showed her looking at him with total confusion.
Yeah. O'Brien, how about you?
I am going to give it to Lwaxana, and it is for the dick grab, the off-camera, over-the-pants dick grab that she does. Because it is hard to read that scene as anything less. If you want to look at it, I think it's like 13 minutes and 30 seconds or 45 seconds into the episode. Like, she is definitely reaching around below the belt when she goes and pushes herself up against him. She doesn't really know him. She's met him one other time. In a probe.
If you are Majel Barrett and you are Star Trek nobility, you have a license to kill on any Star Trek set.
Yeah.
You have a license to grab some junk, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They are not going to throw you off the set.
No.
I think that gives a little more credence to the idea that she actually grabs some hog.
Yeah. If anybody ever goes on like one of those cruises or goes to a convention where they get Rene Aubergenois up on stage and answering
that
questions.
That pronunciation is a thought crime. Rene Aubergenois.
Yeah, ask him.
I would love to know.
That's what you want to do, is corner him on the Star Trek cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Near a railing.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he'll hear a phone ring and go, what is that, the communicator? Gotta go! Tomok and Jalad and Tanagra. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you. Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com and use the code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Ben, what's coming up on the next episode?
Next episode is season 1, episode 17. Dramatis Personae. Odo is caught in the middle when an alien influence pits Kira against Sisko in a deadly power struggle. Adam, shall we find out if we are going to be drunk for this episode?
Let's do it.
Okay.
The reviews are in from our last shit show episode. And
yeah.
High marks for us.
Yeah. Us being on the verge of passing out was apparently great for people.
It sure does cut both ways when the majority of people respond with, I wish you were this drunk all the time.
Thank you for encouraging good life choices by me and Adam. We've talked a little bit offline about our random number generator and maybe augmenting that in the future. I think we'll probably wait until we're through season one to make any tweaks to that. But we were talking about some other random squares we could land on and fun ideas for that. So if you have ideas for those kinds of things, I would love to see like a collaborative document get put together of like things we could try, just to have like some stuff to consider. I feel like Adam and I have like 8 or 9 ideas, but you know, go sick.
I wonder if we could make this into a board game.
Oh.
In such a way that like we roll dice at the end of every episode and it just advances us forward that number of squares, and then we land on X.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe one of them is like a chutes and ladders punishment where we go all the way back to season one, episode one.
I like it.
No!
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Well, Adam, these people have been clicking their clon peaks long enough. Should we see what our fate is?
Let's do...
It's a 10.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
So we will be normally inebriated, not totally inebriated next time.
Sounds great. I'm relieved.
Well, one thing that comes as a big relief to us is the unwavering support of our viewers. They support us in so many wonderful ways. They go on Apple Podcasts and leave a nice review. They recommend us to their friends and family, which, you know, is a great way to stick it to us also, because this does remain a pretty embarrassing enterprise for us. So if you want to embarrass us or help us grow our audience, you know, put the word out there.
I mean, as ashamed as we are of this thing, that remains one of our highest priorities, right?
Yeah. Give our other show, Friendly Fire, a try. There's like 3 or 4 episodes out by the time you hear this.
That's right. It's our war movie podcast with John Roderick, Benjamin R. Harrison, and yours truly.
I think you'll like it. We should thank Adam Ragusa and Dark Materia for the music you hear on the program. We should thank the great folks at MaximumFun.org who provide a lot of support. And there's so many great podcasts over at MaxFun that everybody listening will surely enjoy.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and another episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that can't stop yelling at each other.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.